Strike a Chord Podcast, music chit chat with your hosts Valentina Gikowski and Amla Piriakaba.
We're thrilled to bring you today's episode, which is a special two-part series with some great artists talking about music and the industry, which we've named Musical Musings. We have some incredible insights from these guests, so get ready for an enlightening discussion. And don't worry, if you're left wanting more, part two will be released in our next episode. So without further ado, let's jump right in.
Welcome to the Strike a Chord Podcast, and on this episode, this is a very special episode for us because we got a whole bunch of people, a whole bunch of musicians, and it's going to be a very exciting episode, I should say. I'll introduce everyone. Starting from my left-hand side, I've got Simon Perlman, independent artist. Welcome, Simon.
Thank you. Good to be back.
That's right. That one thing I didn't mention, that they're all previous guests on the podcast. Yeah. And we've got Arif Ulsoy on bass.
Hello. I think, was I number three, I think.
You were number three, yeah. I think. And we've got Sarita Makag.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
You were number five, I think, or six.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I can't remember, but that was a very beautiful conversation we had together. Yes. So thank you for having me again.
We'll have another one today.
Thank you.
And we got the ever beautiful Amla.
Hello.
Thanks, everyone, for coming. I think this we've sort of like planned this with Amla for a while, to have multiple people on the podcast and just to get everyone's view on the music industry. So everyone's got a different sort of background on music and different views and different approaches, and everyone, you know, is doing different things and different projects. Just want to put it out there. Just what are your thoughts on the industry at the moment, I think, is the big question. Whoever wants to go first? Go, Simon. All right.
Big question. I think it's a complicated one, but you know, we were having this chat before about how it's never going to change in terms of independent artists doing it because they love it, really. That's what it boils down to. But you know, so I try and be positive. I think there's a lot to be said about streaming services and artists being put at a massive disadvantage.
Actually, on that, good point you brought up, streaming services. You've put out a fair bit of songs. You've put a lot of effort into that. How are you getting your music out there? Are you using these streaming services, or are you not using them, or is it a bit of a hybrid thing that you're doing?
Yeah, it's a necessary evil. So I usually pay for a distribution company that gets it out to all the relevant.
Who are you with?
DistroKid at the moment. DistroKid. Yeah. Yes,
same.
Yeah, they're sort of the more user friendly for me. But okay. But what I wanted to say in relation to that the best one I've found is Bandcamp. Because Bandcamp, the proceeds, basically most of the proceeds go to the artist. The only problem with Bandcamp is it's not necessarily the most user friendly for a lot of people that haven't got the app or. So
yeah, I found that, and even navigating, actually buying your albums, the experience wasn't quite there. You had to click and click and click, and then you got this version, that wave, and this and that. And I think it is the experience isn't 100%, but yeah, it's something out there, right? But something's out there. So
yeah,
and the proceeds are, well, most of them are going to.
Yeah, it's the trade off because it's the fairest system, but unfortunately, it's not like something such as Spotify, where you just download the app, ease of access, you know, streams. But I think the advantage of Bandcamp is that it's, you know, obviously aside from being fair to the artist, or the most fair to artists, is you can just put everything out on there, whereas some of the other streaming services, you're a bit limited in terms of what you can do, and you can put incentives for fans and so forth. So, yeah.
What if you don't have fans?
Turn the fan on.
Put your mic up, Sarita.
Turn the fan on. If you don't have a fan, just turn the fan on and cool down.
And if you've got a big fan, that's even better.
Yes, and put the coolers and everything. Yeah.
Just, even if it's just one fan.
Exactly.
Only fan.
The only fan. Oh, that's a different platform altogether. Maybe we should do something like that for musicians. We just, you know, we provide services to watch, but only musicians, you know, it's like.
What kind of services are we talking about?
Well, music services.
trust me.
However you want to portray your music services, yeah, is totally up to you, you know.
Trust me to get the tangent that just goes off topic.
That's anyway. All right. That's what we need, mate. So, well, on that topic and on you know, that sort of part of getting exposed to a lot of people and stuff like that. And if you've been exposed to a lot of people doing a lot of gigs, and especially like all sorts, like weddings and everything like that, and wedding gigs, you do get exposed a lot.
You do, yeah. You never quite know who's in the audience. Yeah. So I've done gigs where, you know, I actually met a producer at a wedding gig that I went to uni with, that I didn't realize had become a producer. So, you know, and so it just goes back to, doesn't matter which gig you're doing, you always have to pretend like there's someone who knows what they're, you know, talking about, what they're hearing.
So does that give you even more jitters in your belly when you know?
Oh, no.
Or does that give you, does that drive you a bit
more? No, I think it definitely drives, yeah, not jitters. But yeah, exposures are, I'm quite new to the digital realm, like very new, thanks to Valentino. But I've definitely don't have a producer hat on. Mine's more so live, you know, doing some recordings, things like that, but always for someone. I've never really recorded anything for myself or not quite.
That's an interesting thing, because you have done a lot of playing for a lot of people and session stuff, but where does that leave your creativity?
Well, I think I like to bring my creativity to the session, which is interesting, because I'm I don't want to make the show about me, but I'm a late bloomer in terms of did everything backwards. So later in my later years, I've started to do all the stuff that I should have done, you know, in my 20s, if you like. But the creativity part is what I've basically groomed myself to do, both live and in the studio. So I like to bring it to the session, to wherever it is, and I just find that part of it really exciting, because otherwise it could just be another job. I know a few session guys that, or session musicians, that they don't really enjoy going to record. They just view it like, oh, I'm just gonna go do a shift at the studio. And I definitely don't want to be that way. I'd love to get excited about what I'm recording. Yeah, whether it's a paid gig or not, that's irrelevant for me. But I know that's a really big issue if you are trying to make a living as a musician. So,
Sarita, you've got a fair bit of exposure within a lot of genres now, because you've mixed in your world into other genres. How are you finding that response from the people? Because you've got a few projects that are really different. How do you find, do the people reciprocate? Do they come back and do they say, oh, okay, this is different? Or do they say, oh, you know, it's okay, but, I prefer this, or I prefer that. What sort of, where do you see it? Where do you see this whole thing, this journey that you're going through?
In a context of contents of, like, I do a lot of projects, of course, but I have my own creativity as well. So when I play it, like, of course, I'm a folk music artist as well, and singer and sitarist, and have to develop with Sarita McCarg and her band, or, you know, working in the movies and thinking of that, what, like at the Crown as well, I did the project by myself as well. Or say working with Alana or with Sophia as well, with the different projects, or Sarita McCarg and her band with the Greek music and Turkish music and Arabic and, you know,
Spawn.
And Spawn, my God.
Yeah, Spawn, I was gonna ask you about that. Spawn is great.
It's like, but it's so different. It's not the, like, audience, they feel, they, every genre, they find it. Like, I don't, for me, it's like I don't want to, or it's not that I don't. I feel like it doesn't come out as exactly the same, because Sarita and sitar and tabla is duo is separate. And then when I have a trio, I have to have a different concept of, like, what the organization is there and what the venue is there and what kind of audience is there, I can bring into that.
So how do you calculate, or when do you calculate when you get there, or do you sort of see what information there is beforehand before you get there, with regards to the venue and the audience?
I had to prepare, like I need to know. I mean, a lot of people, they go to the, like you mentioned, a lot of people go to the gig and they play and everything. And same exactly, if I'm doing a recording, I had to know fully, you know, where I'm going to the studio or thing.
Yeah.
So at the same with the gig as well, or the project as well, I need to know before they hand over, and this, I need to understand what is the concept behind or what kind of their view is there, you know.
Yeah, because you do the crown, then you go do the tote. So you know, it's a big
yeah, exactly.
Contrast,
like
right?
Other day, I went to the crown, and I just like 5 hours I'm doing in the crown. But there is crown. I'm doing my classical plus because the crown is like Flavors of India, that show I did, and not just the Westerners, you know, or all kind of Indians. They come and they ask. Sometime you get to ask, okay, can you sing that song as well? Like Padaro Mara Dei, so from India, the well-known song as well, or some Bollywood songs. So I had to prepare because I know that this is the venue I'm going, and this is the audience is going to be there, and if what is the demand is there. So I like to organize before that, and sometimes it can be difficult, you know, because
and this is what I was going to get to now. You're actually, and this is what we've talked about with Amla as well. You're running it really like a business, right? So you're preparing, you're putting your time and effort into preparing going for a gig, or preparing to go into a session, or whatever it might be. So this is one of the topics that I wanted to get into: the preparation, the time and the effort that's involved in a musician getting prepared and getting ready for a gig is not just the gig, which is a few hours.
No, your mind is like your concept of 2 hours of. You may be doing 1 hour set, okay, 45 minutes of set, but the audience and the organizer and then the venue also, or, you know, the booker also don't know. They just book you for the concert. Right. And they said, okay, we're going to give you that much pay. But it's not about the pay. The money we all need, but money doesn't come for me.
It's not the driver.
I'm not to focus on money is my priority. I like to give music where if I'm satisfied, if I'm not satisfied, how the audience is going to be satisfied, no? Yeah.
So
myself.
True.
So if anything with the spawn as well, it's a lot of stress in the spawn gig, you know, because if I'm doing a duo or trio or my own band, then I know what the ragas we're selecting. Or say one Macedonian tune and one Indian tune blend together in makam or ragas.
Yeah, I guess it's
put it together.
Different genre,
it's pretty
right?
Different genre. And spawn is very heavy. So so every gig I do, it's like and standing up, you know, I don't think so. Any female standing artist there who's
not
playing
with a
sitar. No.
Very heavy instrument.
I just wanna explain, spawn is a punk. Sort of like punk.
Actually,
rock.
No, punk. It's not punk. It's psychedelic rock, you know, but also have meaning into it, that we write our own songs. And it's okay. I tell you, I was playing at the Cherry Bar or Tote or so many venues, and the effect of the music or what the spawn band as a whole bring out. There was one lady, she probably. You know, age of 50, 60 is in that. And after the gig is finished, and I came down on the from the stage, and she was just like tears, you know, she had a lot of tears in it. I'm saying, think, okay, you're all right. And that's
said, I did my back. No.
No, I think she was saying in the sign language that the song or the band or the whole song or what we were playing. It touched her heart, but she can't hear it. She's deaf.
But she can feel it.
But she can feel it. She can't speak. She can't hear it. And her partner was there. They said, so for me, it's like if that touched someone to that level, then my work is done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not. But it's a lot of hard work. It's when I stand up there, it's like I don't need anyone for a half an hour to talk to me. Before I used to be like going out and, you know, I'll be fun. You know, I'm things.
Yeah.
But as soon as I'm becoming more involved, it's like my brain, how do I, because the lot of responsibility is there, yeah. you know, when you see, you're there.
I'm going the other way now. I used to be the one that never used to go out before and talk to people and stuff. Oh my God, you know, I've got a job that I have to do. I've got performance, I've got a show to do, and a lot of stress put on myself. I'm going towards the other way now. Yeah. Now I'm actually relaxing now because I actually feel that I play better if I'm relaxed beforehand. So I'll go out and I'll, if I see people that I know, I'll go and have a chat to them. It'll just break up the monotony of what's going on in your head. And I'm not quite sure whether it's like that for you guys, but I was that person where it was really, I need to play everything perfectly and everything has to be spot on. No mistakes, no this, yeah. no that, no mucking around, even with the people in my band. And I think they had enough as well of it, of my previous band anyway. But but I'm learning to go to the other side now, to actually relax and enjoy, well, these people have come to see you, so enjoy them, you know, acknowledge the people that are there. Go for it.
I'll take over from there.
Go for it.
So I was sort of in a similar position. So not so much, wanting to play everything perfectly, everything to go perfectly, but almost punishing myself when it didn't. And I was finding that after the gigs, I wasn't really, you know, like happy with myself. But lately, I've learned to entrust that there's like, basically a higher intelligence will just
Same.
Make it happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of factors in there, but one of them is you have to have done the groundwork, obviously. So whether you're prolific on your instrument or not, that's irrelevant. You're prolific to a certain standard, that's your standard. So you don't have to be a virtuoso, but you have to be at least well-versed and have a lot of, you know, vocabulary and all that kind of stuff.
Have the confidence at that level yeah. to be able to do the gig.
But somehow just have like a faith, basically, that if you can channel that energy to the point where you need it to use it at that moment, then something else takes over. Now, whether it's, you know, different beliefs or whatever, the universe, whatever it is, but higher intelligence, let's call it, will take care of it. And it's funny how it's almost perfect. Like, it's not too little, not too much. It's just right. And then you
Kellogg's, sorry.
Yeah, it's definitely like a Kellogg's-y thing. And then, so
Goldilocks.
You may not even feel it in that moment. But then later on, if someone's recorded, you think, did I do that? Like, oh, that was, yeah. you know, that sounded amazing. Right at that point. And then you just, you know.
And you're spot on in regards to channeling, because sometimes adrenaline takes over as well. I don't know, Simon, you do all sorts of gigs. You do solo gigs and you do with your band as well, A Man Called Sun, and there's different variations of that project. When you do your solo gigs, do you find there's more adrenaline going through your body that you need to sort of like control, or is it with other people on stage where, you know, you're finding that energy can be overwhelming?
Yeah, I mean, they're two different beasts, the solo and the band gigs. Certainly from my experience, I enjoy feeding off the energy of other musicians. That's not to say I don't love playing solo as well, but I think with solo there's a little less margin for error. So you have to be, I was saying this the other day to someone, that you can't let your guard slip from, you had to be on the ball. So you can't quite relax as much. Whereas I think with a band, not that you're hanging back, I can't really hang back because I'm out the front playing guitar and singing, but it's more so that there are moments where I might turn to my guitarist, Sam, and you know, if it's a full band gig and, you know, he's doing a solo, and I can just kind of hang back, or, you know, go back a few meters or whatever on the stage, and then he takes
and
over.
Just take a breath.
Yeah.
Or just,
you know. Yeah, recalibrate.
Yeah.
And then, but solo, it's like, I actually found this the other week when I was playing at a small venue in town. I was support act, and I found that because the usual set I had in mind was a little bit mellow, I was like, I'm going to, you know, it was quite a good turnout at this for this band that was doing their single launch. And because I was opening, I was like, I'm going to have to up the ante with the energy. So I just sort of felt.
So how did you do that? Because that can affect a lot. I've been in that same situation. I'm curious as to how you
well
what you did.
Lots of alcohol. No, I'm just joking.
you bring out another bottle in the brown paper bag.
Yeah. Yeah, little help from Gentleman Jack. No, basically had to look at the set and go, okay, I'm going to have to change a few things around. I'm going to have to put some other songs in, open with a song that's a bit more atmospheric, scene setting, upbeat. Basically focus on the rockier numbers. So some nights, you know, you're like, I think this is going to be too slow for the crowd. I'm just going to have to. It doesn't mean that I'm going to have to start, you know, singing like, an Aerosmith type. But it's not my style. I can't sing like that. But it just means that I'm going to play songs that are a bit more get the crowd moving.
A bit more dynamic.
A bit more dynamic.
Yeah.
So it's quite thinking on your feet, I suppose, and just throwing certain things out the window. And that's what you were saying before about. That's what you were saying about the groundwork element. Doing the groundwork and also doing it enough times, you know what works and what doesn't from a set list point of view.
I think what works and what doesn't, you need that needs awareness. I think you need to be aware of what works, what doesn't, especially when you're on stage. Like if you're doing a set show, I'll give you an example where I do a flamenco show where everything's set with choreography and dances and stuff like that. There's no room to change, right?
That's what I was getting at with I was about to say you've obviously the groundwork combined with having enough repertoire for different, and all of us are very versatile musicians. We play in a whole bunch of different styles, so we need to be able to cater. But then sometimes that doesn't work, does it? Because what we think might come across to the audience, they might be having like a rough night, and then it's trying to maintain that our energy and not letting that energy affect how we perform as well.
I definitely agree. But I think it's all also the expectation. If the expectation is there where the people are going to sit down and watch a show concert style, the expectation is that they're going to sit there and watch. If they're in a venue style like at the Tote, or you've done other venues like Mama Chin and stuff like that.
Dive bars as well.
Yeah, dive bars, right? But the dive bars is, and that might be the only fans sort of thing.
Quite possibly.
You know? But I think that's where the expectation lies. Like if people are going to come to your show and they're going to see, you know, a concert style.
Or flamenco, definitely. Yeah.
They're going to expect to see something there that's rehearsed or whatever. If it's in a venue style of show, or if you're, you know, where people are sitting there and having a few drinks and stuff like that and throwing bottles at you and all of that sort of, you know, you've got a cage in front of you, you know, Blues Brothers style, that's also an expectation. That's how I see it. Because then you're expected, like you said, you need to probably change the dynamics or put it to 11, you know, or something like that, of that nature, or change your repertoire. I've done a solo gig where I'm, you know, it's only me and a guitar, right? And these people, I think, expected like a 7-piece orchestra out of one guitar. So what do? You know, it's like, oh, can you make it a bit more livelier? I go, I'll try. So you need to change your repertoire and your way of playing sometimes. You know, it's not the ideal situation, but you need to get the...
No one requested horses, did they? That's important.
But when I'm playing at the like Spawn or anywhere in the venues, like high venue like Tote or, you know, Cherry Bar or Max Watts and everything, I've never seen people sit down on the floor and listening to music. And
You're always sort of in the background.
It's just like I'm thinking how when you open eyes and they're all sitting there and the bar is and Cherry Bar and Tote and, you know, all these venues. I thought, okay, people will be like having a drink and thing, but as soon as they get into it, the music, because I think if you enjoy it, they will love it.
So it's a transcendent sort of thing.
Yeah, because if the energy is transferring, you know, if you're not enjoying yourself on the stage,
sometimes
or you're on, and sometimes can be hard.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you just reminded me, sometimes though, just getting back to the solo versus band thing, because that's an important point. Like, I find a lot of solo gigs, you're kind of part of the ambience a bit, depending on the venue.
Yeah,
like
sometimes so
like,
true.
Yeah, you'll be like, okay, you're in the front bar of such and such venue. I'm not going to name names. I've had too many. We won't go down that rabbit hole. I've had too many run-ins recently with
just
venues.
Just tell me after.
Yeah, so full disclaimer. No, please contact my lawyer if there's any problems. But getting back to this, I think with band venues, it's like, okay, there's a band playing, let's go watch the band. With solo acts where you're booked, just you're the solo guy or the solo girl, whatever.
Yeah.
You kind of become quite often part of the atmosphere, part of it. And they just, people just come in and out, they're floating out, like a family might come and the kids might watch and then that sort of thing. So I think that's what I'm finding, like the solo, quite often in my experience, if I'm just one person, I'm just there in the background. But if it's a band, it's like, I've got to try and find a way to get their attention. Whereas solos, I don't mind being part of the background.
Yeah. But also, and on that, I used to, and I still do, but I used to do a lot more solo gigs for corporates where you are in the background. That's what they're going to hire you for, and they're going to give you good money for it. And that's another thing where you need to concentrate that you are in the background and you're not at the front. So you again need to change. If you are a front sort of person, you need to change your repertoire, change your technique, or change whatever in that instant. Where they know that you're there, they just want something in the background, which is fine. If you're able to do that, and believe me, that's bread and butter sort of stuff. It can be well paid. But if you're that person where you're that front man and you're eager to, you're going to get bored quite quickly, you know? And I understand where you're coming from with that, you know?
Very, very, I find it very hard to do that if I'm just on my own as a solo guy. Like, it's like getting the balance right. Like, again, it's like if I'm with a band, it's like I want to kind of up the energy. But if I'm solo, I'm like, it is a certain more relaxed, generally a bit more relaxed feel. That's why I wanted to use that example before the other week in that dive bar. Nice people, but yeah, it's a dive bar.
But isn't it in that also, like, if you're doing your solo in the background as well, but there's also challenge that time. Yeah. It's challenging because you never know who's listening. Yep. And it happened in so many times with me. And
are
then
always with
and
me?
They come always. Back, oh, that was that song. I'm thinking, okay. So you have to be very aware of, like, yeah. I mean, everyone. I mean, I'm myself. I don't have to judge anyone, but I'm just myself. I'm saying it every time. I have to be put it out there where, yeah, mistakes is okay, you know, but try to.
I was just going
to
say.
Because being an Indian as well, okay. Yeah. And like singing in Indian music and Indian. They're outside, so many people out there, you know. Not you never know. There is a lot of
so
criticize,
true.
You know.
Yeah.
And yes, we are learning, you know. I'm learning still. I'm trying my best. And every time is going to, time is changing. So there's, well, the situation will change. Maybe next year we will be different mindsets,
correct.
You know, and how we're going to be
playing. It's just what you said before. You don't know who's in the crowd. I played a gig where they hired me and I'm playing my stuff and it's all like flamenco stuff. And then this person comes up to me and he starts speaking in Spanish. And I go, oh, okay. And I can understand Spanish, but it's hard for me to converse because I haven't spoken in a while because I speak English. But we started talking, he started talking in English and stuff like that. He goes, oh, I know this guy in Spain and they, you know, they play flamenco. I go, ah, here we go. But he was so thankful of, you know, listening, goes, you play like they play there and you've brought me nostalgia back. So I've hit something there, yeah. a sort of an emotion, and he was there for the whole thing and just listening and sitting down and listening for the whole thing. Mind you, I was just a background sort of thing, but he was like, he came up to me, thanked me and everything like that. And as you said before, it's not about the money.
No.
That fulfills you on a different
your
level.
Heart is like every time I play, if I don't do justice to myself, then people might think, okay, that was a fantastic, oh, that was a great gig. And I said, okay, yep, because my heart should be satisfied, no?
Yeah, correct. Correct. Go for it.
I got a funny story.
Yeah.
I started laughing, like, because I couldn't, I just remembered it. In 2017, I played a concert for my friend Bure. He came in Turkey for a concert, and we did Sydney, Melbourne. Melbourne was at Nightcat. Now, you know, the stage is in the middle.
Yeah.
Right? So this is like, I'm sort of like an amateur MD. I've never trained whatever, but I love to, especially, I get a few gigs for artists that come in from overseas where we don't really have a chance to rehearse. So I'll put the band together from here and they'll just fly in and do a sound check and we're doing the concert. So I'm like, pressure's on. I'm trying to sort of control, like, watch the drummer, control what things are going on, remind people, okay, you got to do a solo here, you got to do. And I'm playing along, get tapped on the shoulder, and it's this lady. She's like, can you get out of the way so I can see the singer? and here's me, like, I've got this, like, you know, I've put the MD hat on. Like, I'm thinking, mate, you're in control here. Like, you're very important to this stage.
And someone taps you on the shoulder.
Can you get out of the way so I can have a line of sight to the singer? So that actually, like, it can affect you in different ways. Like, some people would get angry or, you know, like, I just pretended like nothing happened and just kept going. But, you know, it's almost crushing to the ego. That
I've got a follow-up story on that sort of a thing. When I used to do the wedding circuit, the Mastania wedding circuit, you'll be familiar with this, many years ago with my dad. And with the Macedonians, when you get going, it can be a very big financial benefit because they throw tips and throw cash, right? And this particular gig, there was a lot of people at this wedding. It was about 400 or 500 people at this wedding, and we're playing, and the people are just nonstop. They're just it's bucketing down. We haven't stopped for about 3-4 hours. It's bucketing down. The venue owner comes up to my dad, and he goes, "There's someone parked in the wrong spot of the car park. Can you stop the band, the music, and just announce this registration place so they can move?" My dad told him to go get anyway.
Yeah.
He goes, "I'm not stopping now. No, I don't care who's parked.
Got mortgage payments."
Oh, that's right, mate. Yeah. He goes, "No way." And then and I could see my dad just going like this, and just going like this. He went, he came back 5 minutes later and asked him again. I thought my dad was gonna hammering with the microphone, because at that point in stage you lose concentration. It's not about just the money coming in, but you're there delegating on stage, right? If you're, like you said before, like you're gonna, you know, have a direct contact with your guitarist and say, "Oh, I'm gonna pull back." There's no way he could do that if someone's on your throat or someone's tapping you on the shoulder, right? But that they're the funny stories that you come up with, and I think resilience and getting used to that is another art form to the musician, where, you know, if you see something in the crowd and it's gonna sort of, like, you know, cause some sort of distraction, you know, it's like it's hard to come back into that zone, you know. But yeah, that's a funny story. It just reminded me of.
I thought you were going to say that the car that was parked was your dad's.
No. No, we had different parking at the back. But it was a funny story. And my dad just told him to go get stuff. He just move, just get out. And it was like full. It was different times, different stories. But I suppose, you know, from a musician's perspective, and like from a musician's passion's perspective, where do you not draw the line, but where do you differ yourself from the normal person to the artist? Because we all have different personalities when we're like this, right? Like, we'll sit down and we'll chat with people, whatever, and then we become a different person on stage. For you guys, is it on stage where you become that different person, or do you guys live it outside of that that realm?
Well, I'll go first. Mine's definitely on stage.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because I'm a bass player, because you just can't be a superstar off the stage. It's not possible. Like, you know, I'm not a singer, not a guitarist, not a drummer. So, you know, you're the bass player. Token bass player, but definitely on stage. And I actually used to play drums. I started playing drums when I was probably 7 or 8 years old.
You started playing drums as well.
Played till about, I don't know, 11, 12. My dad refused to buy me a drum kit. So I kept borrowing drum kits from people and practice pads and chairs and whatever. He's like, "I'm not buying you one because it's too loud." And then I did have a little nylon string guitar that my sister had one lesson and put aside. Started playing that, just picked up a few things. And one day at school, I was in year 7, picked up Fender Precision Bass that my teacher, Miss Peard, it was her personal bass that she'd bring. And I just started playing, got a clean sound. And she's like, okay, you know, this sounds good. How long have you been playing for? I said, about 2 minutes. So, and then at high, we used to have these things like called creative arts nights, you know, basically like a battle school concert. Yeah, that kind of thing. And I remember the very first time I had to perform, everyone was nervous. And I just, whether it's like something I had done, I don't know, in a previous life or whatever it is, I just took a few deep breaths, went on, and I remember it being very, very hot on stage. A lot of people are like, they get overwhelmed by that the very first time. And I just thought, no, I'm just going to do what I think I know how to do. I didn't even really look at the crowd, just gazed into space. And I've kept that same attitude. So every time I walk onto the stage now, it's like I'm there to do a job, perform, and I'm not really worried about. I mean, you kind of make contact sometimes, you get feedback, you get energy, depending on the gig. But if it's a big stage, I just do my job and don't worry about it. And that's my, you know, artist hat on stage. But off,
it's funny. You go in a different sort of way. Simon, you go in a different, I've seen you live, and you go in a different way. So you become a different person. You become the artist on stage. That's what I've noticed. Even with the band around you, it's like you become the front man. It's like when I have a chat to you outside of that realm, it's like, yeah, you know, we're musicians and stuff like that, but you jump on stage and you actually get into it, and you, I don't know whether you're aware of what the crowd is doing, but you go into that artist, a man called Sun. You get into it, and that's what I love.
Oh, thank you. It's very kind. I mean, it feels a little bit unconscious, and I think getting back to what you were saying before, I think it was Neil Finn who said some of the best gigs you do are mindless, like you're not. You're sort of channeling something, and we're not really a band that's in for that histrionic kind of grand. We don't do a lot of grand gestures or, you know, rock moves on stage. Like, I'm not going to be doing any windmills or somersaults, but
smashing any guitars.
But I think we're trying to channel. I think all of us we're trying to channel a bit of that emotion that comes from the songs.
And I think that people want to see that. Even I'm like you as well. Like when you're playing the flute, I can see. You're in a different realm, and the people actually feed off your energy. It's like when you can see, we can see that in the artist. And me being an artist, I completely understand that. But when I'm watching as an artist, I can relate to it. But everyone's got their own little thing, you know. And this is the beauty about going and watching other artists and other people, because everyone's unique. But I find that really interesting where. You can speak to a person and then you can see them on stage and they're not the same person.
Yeah, it's a different I've seen Sarita perform in Spawn, which and oh my goodness, it's complete. You bring a completely different energy to when you do your solo performances. You're still there, the essence is there, but it's like
different person.
Yeah, it's like you become this diva that like in the best sense. It's just really exciting because like you Thank said you. There's more energy involved in Spawn. It's a big band and
even
it's big music.
I'll just say, not even just Spawn, like you said before, the person become you perform with Mina many shows as well.
Yes,
so it's like for me 10-15 minutes is like just that's just another. Didn't I talk to you? Then Alexander is from Monash, from Melbourne Uni. I was discussing about the other project as well and the interview. And they said, because there we have so many masks. I talked to you last time as well.
Yes.
So we have like having a mask.
Or different hats.
Different hats. Yeah. I call mask because,
or having multiple personalities.
It's like, so what we as soon as we come out, you know, we have a gear and everything, we chat and everything. And then another mask. Where we have to put our attention to the sound engineer, and also with the Spawn as well, because there is when I'm having my solo gig, or you know, one gig is book, okay, 45 minute set, two sets you need to play, and that's it. Five band, we all had rehearsal. But when you're having a 10 bands line up, or 7 bands a line up, or 6 line up, because Spawn is a, we always have a different the lineup, you know, with the who's doing the opening and who's doing the headline, who's
coordinating.
And the sound engineer as well is so different. So our intention have to be suddenly changed from the friend circle. Hey, how you doing? Everything? Oh, nice to meet you. And then again, sound engineer comes. So you come to that mask again. That okay, you're not performing, but you have to pay attention to where the sound needs to, because that's man important as well.
Can I just say sorry? You reminded me of something. But getting back to the whole wearing masks. I mean, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but we all do that. You know, I don't know what everyone does for work, but
yeah.
I mean, I've been a public servant for 20 years, and I can tell you that is a far bigger mask.
You'd have a concrete mask on. Oh. You'd have a metal mask on.
And you know, it's not, I mean, you understand. You understand even lots, a lot of masks, because not just even performance, not even just walking on the street as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you have to be very careful
what you say.
The
everything.
Artistic mask is the most natural mask. Yeah. We all wear masks, but I think it being all of us being artists,
exactly. Yep.
It feels like the most natural suit to put on.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the unmasking. So maybe we've got all these layers. But like the final one comes off reveals the artist.
You've got it. You got a point there, I reckon.
But you know, when that artist one, where that will come, that once we everything is done, when you're playing, then the mask is automatically open.
Yeah.
Because you're channeling through your music and through songs. And in some places, sometime I've shocked myself, like in middle of the song, I just burst and crying, and that with the music, because you're traveling, you're not seeing outside who's that's front right. of you, who's audience, who's
it's
there.
It's all about the soul.
And that's where it's connected.
Yeah.
The beauty of that.
Yeah. And you've got no mask, you're naked.
Exactly.
Really.
And there is no, you don't need to prove anyone.
No, yeah, exactly.
You're in the moment.
You're in the moment.
You shouldn't be proving it to anyone. You should be doing
it. I think that, a trigger for that would be if you are, and I've only recently experienced this, probably in the last 5 years. So I'm be 49 next week, but in the last 5 years, like all the layers only come off when there's no judgment.
Mm.
So if you feel as a musician that you're being judged, whether it's good or bad, because sometimes being judged for being a virtuoso, for example, that's like pressure. The pressure's on. Yeah. You're like, aren't you supposed to be a virtuoso? But you're making mistakes or whatever.
But I don't think it's only for artists and musicians.
No,
I think it's for everyone in general.
Like.
In general,
we have to be creative.
If you feel that you're not being judged, then everything
flows.
The soul comes out. And that's where
we were talking about this.
Finessing the flow.
The flow. Or even like on that, I did a gig last week and I posted a story of it. And I've actually made a mistake. It was an improv and I messed it up.
I saw it, but I liked it.
Yeah, no, and I laughed at it because I actually laughed. It was really organic because I was just really relaxed, and that comes with experience as well, and not caring. We all have that expectation, that mask where we want everyone to like us, and I let that go and I just went, oops, I made a mistake, and I laughed, and then everyone else laughed, and it was a nice energy, and then I just did it again.
But it's funny how you develop. Like if that happened to me about 10 years ago,
I would have cried.
My guitar, turn everything off, and start wrapping up my leads. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, I would have walked off. That was me a year ago. I was crying in my car after a gig that everyone liked, but I wasn't happy with how, like what you brought up earlier. If you're not, we've all brought it. If you're not feeling like that was your best, then I went, why am I doing this? And you have to almost have a why.
Questioning.
And then you're like, you've got to enjoy it.
That's the end of part one. Be sure to come back next week and continue this journey in part two.